KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. Additional support comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
From Café Vermilionville in Lafayette, we're out to lunch with Professor of Finance and Director of the award-winning Broken Road Reports, Peter Ricchiuti. It's business, Acadiana style.
Hi, I'm Peter Ricchiuti. Welcome to Out to Lunch. One of the things we're proudest of in Acadiana is our culture. A big part of it is music and dance, Cajun and Zydeco. There are similarities and notable differences between Cajun music and dance and Zydeco music and dance. Leaving aside for the moment the intertwined Acadian and African influences, one major musical difference, obvious even to people from the outside, is an instrument you hear in Zydeco only, and that's the fratois, or rub board. The rub board didn't start out as a musical instrument. It started out as, well, a rub board. You used it to wash clothes, and then if you put thimbles on your fingers, you could make a scratching sound by strumming it. It was Clifton Chenier and his brother Cleveland who came up with the idea of making a metal or stainless steel rub board. The guy they turned to make it was their friend and fellow worker at the Texaco refinery in Port Arthur, Texas. He was a master welder, metal fabricator, and fellow Louisiana native named Willie Landry. Willie's son, T. Don Landry, has spent a lifetime making rub boards under the name Key of Z. He's made around 3,000 of them. They're in the hands of regular folks and famous musicians like Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top and Rihanna. There's even a T. Don Landry rub board in the Smithsonian. T. Don, welcomed out to lunch.
Thank you for having me.
The intertwined Acadian and African cultures that have given us Cajun and Zydeco music and dance have led us to the relationship between the styles of music and the people who play them and dance to them being referred to as First Cousins. First Cousins is the name of a film about this very subject. The film was written, produced, and directed by two sisters, Mariah and Alista East. Both East sisters have a PhD and are professional culture historians. Mariah is a folklorist and festival programmer, as well as being the director of the movie First Cousins. Mariah, welcomed out to lunch.
Thank you so much.
Don, making a rub board is not like sitting out back of the house and carving a wooden whistle with a pocket knife. Cutting and bending metal and stainless steel with the kind of accuracy you need requires specialized skills and machinery. Can you walk us through the basic steps of making a rub board? What does it begin with, getting a sheet of stainless steel delivered?
Yeah, well, I used to cut them all out by hand, which I still do a little bit with snips. But I make so many now, I can't. It's too hard on my hands. So I have the stainless steel cut, the sheets cut, and it's all laser cut and everything. And then once I get the material back to my shop, well, then I start the bending process. That's all done by hand.
Well, that is by hand.
That's
okay.
Done by hand. There's no electricity involved once I get it. The only electricity I use is to use my little etcher.
To sign them?
Because I number them and sign them. The date it was made, and number them, put my website information on the back. And and then I polish the edges and everything, and I put some edging around the top, you know, make it comfortable. And then pack them up and ship them out.
And where do they get shipped to?
All over the world.
Really?
All over the world.
There's
I have them in every state in the United States, and I have them in Israel, I have them in Africa, I have them in France, Germany, you name it.
Are they used
Australia.
For different kinds of music?
Yeah, all kinds of music, you know. A lot of people just buy them, I think, to hang them up or just use them as a conversation piece. Or a lot of them are not musicians, you know. They just want them, just saw them at a festival or think it's cool, so they want to try it out, you know, and stuff like that, so...
And
you know.
Are different rub boards cut for different musicians? Do they have just little idiosyncrasies they want in their particular instrument?
Well, you know, I used to custom make them, but there again, I don't do that anymore. They're all pretty much standard size. But They seem to like my the ribs of the rub board is what makes the difference between mine and other people, and the material, the type of stainless steel that I use, the grade stainless steel that I use.
And the ribs themselves are different rub board to rub board?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And the thickness.
The thickness, yeah.
It's different too.
Mariah, it took you 8 years to make your movie First Cousins. When you write a book, even if you don't have a publisher, you can sell it on Amazon. You can sell pieces of art online without being represented by a gallery. What are the avenues for distributing an independent film? You can give it away on YouTube, of course, but are there other web-based opportunities that you'll actually make your money back? Or to make money, do you still have to go through the old-fashioned way of doing things and get your film into festivals and get a legitimate film distributor?
Well, I didn't get an official film distributor, but what we did was we ordered 1,000 DVDs. We had a premiere back in October in conjunction with festivals like Cadien and Creole. And it was an 800-seat auditorium, Angel Hall at UL, and we almost sold out. And a lot of people went home with DVDs that night, so that was a really good kickstart to getting them out there. And then I just left this morning. I just went to the Jean Lafitte Center. They've been approved for the National Park Service here in Lafayette and in Louisiana, and so they'll be in 4 different national parks in the state. And then they're in Vermilionville, Acadian Village, you know, just some of the local gift shops that we have, tourism destinations. And then later, actually next week, I'll be meeting with LPB to discuss broadcasting. They've already approved it for broadcasting. They've asked us to do that, so we're going to go into conversation to see how that's going to look. But I do want to submit to a few more film festivals, but we've done extremely well. We just got a website up. We made the merchandise available through that, and we've had sales. I've actually mailed them to people in Japan and Sweden and Denmark and Canada, all over the United States.
Now, and you're a folklorist. This is your part of the country. But are there other movies inside you? People always ask about books and things like that.
Yeah,
really?
Oh, yeah.
You've got other topics deep in your...
I sure do, yes. and honestly, you know, this was just... You know, I have had a lot of other ideas for a while, but this film is just one of the ones that I knew had to happen first. I guess it was almost like if nothing else happens, I have to pay tribute to my own heritage.
Right.
And so that was really important and heartfelt for me. And so now that that's done, I'm ready to tackle about 10 more.
Oh, great. What's it like working with your sister?
Amazing.
Really?
Amazing.
Some families, you know, kill each other in these kind of
environments. We wanted to a few times, but she's really different than I am. We have a very different approach to presenting any kind of cultural heritage to the public. Her specialty and background was with public history. So she's just a historian, you know, and she knows how to make information appealing to your public audience. And at the same time, she's also one of the ones that can go into a museum and read every panel on every wall. And I'm in and out. You know, I want to see something that captures my attention, and then I want to move on to the next thing.
Sometimes just go to the gift shop. That's really what I do.
I love going to the gift shop. I like to do that too. I'm that kind of museum visitor. She's different. So when we were doing this film, she insisted on doing things that I didn't want to include, like building an entire historical context for how this music developed. And I was just thinking, man, you know, this is going to take forever, because I had already done interviews with at least a dozen musicians, and we had captured their performances. And at this point, we're hitting like 200 something hours of footage. And I was pretty much...
Well, you mentioned all the footage. I wanted to ask you from a business point of view, there's a lot of upfront costs before you're actually have something to sell. How did you do it?
I was a student.
So you're very wealthy, clearly, you know, as a student.
No. No, they took pity on me. You know, they know how much money you don't make when you're a kid in college. And so when I started this, I had just finished my master's degree at UL, and that's when I had started interviewing different artists about my master's thesis, which was about festivals like Cadien and Creole. So when I got to the end of that, I realized how many amazing stories I had to tell, and thought, this isn't going to end up in the archives at a university somewhere. I've got to get this out for people to see. And that's when I decided to just go back to all of the musicians I'd been talking to and say, hey, we're gonna go ahead and tape this and put it on film somewhere. And so that's kind of how it got started. And People at UL were just so helpful with me. We had students working on it. I had people who wanted to put this in their portfolio. So the editors, not all of them, you know, some of them were actual, you know, professional right. editors. But for the most part, I was able to work with some incredible, gifted, and talented students who just have a head for this kind of thing.
Do you have to do Kickstarters, things like that? Or?
We did. We did.
Bake sales.
We did that, and we raised several thousand dollars through that. So obviously, it wasn't all that we needed or
right,
all that we spent.
Break even, but
hey, you know what? We broke even at the end of it, and as far as I'm concerned, that's a success.
I think success for you has got to be the fact that you have a rub board in the Smithsonian.
I have, I think, four of them in there.
Whoa!
And
that's so great.
As a matter of fact, my wife and my grandson, Trey, back when he was in, like, sixth grade, his class went to Washington. You know, a lot of the kids, they go every year.
Yep.
And so my wife called up the Smithsonian and told them that they were coming to see if it was possible. Because they don't display everything they have. I mean, there's no way they can they take it out
yeah,
or whatever
right,
and
right.
every now
Change
and then
exhibits.
Or whatever. Yeah. And so the lady said, sure, when are y'all coming? And we'll set it up. So he was the star of his class.
Oh, I can
you know
imagine.
What I mean? And so she's got pictures of it, but they came out with gloves. They wouldn't touch you know anything. They couldn't touch it or anything. But so I have them in the Smithsonian Institution. Excuse me. I have them in I have them in museums all over the world.
Wow. You know how much does a rub board cost?
Depends. I have my little small one that I have. A provisional patent on that one, the Tidon board is called. Those start from 35 to 40. And then you go up to the child size board. That one's around 115. And then they go up from there, 135, 150, 160, all the way up to right at $200 a piece.
And rub boards, they have different tunings?
Yes, in the key of Z.
Good thinking. That's not right.
It's in the key of Z.
Oh,
you know, they have a note, I'm sure, but it's the rub board is mostly an accompany instrument, you know.
I always tell the guys, hey, y'all, give me a second, I got to tune this.
Yeah.
I tell people, it's the most fun you can have with your clothes on.
Playing it or making it?
Making it and making it and playing it.
Now you
but,
got.
It's fun to play.
You took over from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another generation that's in the wings?
That's what I'm thinking of now, because, you know, I'm not getting any younger. And nobody has really showed any interest, because it's work, a lot of work. You know, young kids these days, you know, I don't know, they want to sit
Pretty
behind
cool
a computer
work,
all day.
Though. Right, right.
But we'll see, because... I want to start traveling a little bit more and, you know, getting away and stuff like that. So if not to take it over right now, I need somebody just to train to, like if I want to go for a weekend or like at the end of the month, we're going to California. So I got to shut down everything. I'm shutting down all my, I sell four different places.
And is it just
on
you
the internet.
In terms of the manufacturing?
Just me. Yep, just me.
Get along with all your employees.
I get along
that's
with all my employees.
Going
yeah,
okay.
I'm the boss of myself.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Peter Ricchiuti. I'm talking with Zydeco rub board maker Tidon Landry and filmmaker Mariah East, director of the movie First Cousins, about the relationship between Creole, Zydeco, and Cajun cultures. Mariah, you know, I've read so many things of basically people writing about how much they enjoyed the film and everything you're doing. I saw Zachary Richard said some very nice things about you. When you're distributing this, don't you get the feeling that there's a desire for to know more about this this part of the world elsewhere? Like, for instance, I'll see Cajun festivals all over the country. Do you think that's an avenue for you?
Yeah, we've already been invited to take it on the road a little bit. We actually showed it at the Air Force Academy in Colorado.
Great.
And then we also got invited to show it in Rhode Island at the Rhythm and Roots Festival. So we'll be doing an all-day workshop with Steve Riley, who's also featured in the film, David Greeley, just a lot of different artists from this area. And they'll be doing a music, cooking, and film and dancing workshop, which I'm doing the dancing and film workshop. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So I take it you're a good dancer.
I mean, I'm all right. You know, I've been out there a little bit.
You've been doing it since you're little, right?
Yeah, I remember dancing literally on my dad's feet when I was really little. And then both of my grandmothers taught me the basics of, you know, the jitterbug, the two-step. And then my other adopted family, my adopted papa, who named the film First Cousins, and that's a whole other story, he's in Lautel. So I'm very connected with that community. And I was telling somebody the other day, I said, I had to have made some kind of history to be the first white, so-called, you know, right, quote-unquote, white woman at Miller's Zydeco Hall of Fame to teach Zydeco. And then the following weekend, I won the rub board contest at the Amberley Building. And I believe this. I said, there's got to be something going on with that. But I love it, man.
I love it. Things are really picking up.
Yeah.
That is great. When you were doing that movie, what surprised you the most? I mean, you and your sister had a great understanding of the culture, but what did you learn from it? The experience, I guess.
Yeah, you know, the experience or just the...
Well, both.
Of making the film?
Yeah, of making the film, and because obviously you had to become a little bit of a business person in doing
this. Yeah,
that's
probably the biggest challenge for me. I'm very artistic, very creative, and thankfully my mother's very businesslike, so that kind of has transferred a little bit. You know, I'm a fairly organized person, but that was definitely a challenge. You know, I know, like, Don's talking about basically having a shut down shop when he's not in town, and that's how it felt a lot. You know, I was the one who had to get music licensing rights. I was getting
right.
You know, the actually editing every second on that was, I was there, you know, full hands on. I was asking all of the questions and directing every, you know, set. So I mean, it was just, it was a lot. I learned a lot through the process. I don't even know what I could say.
So it pushed you out of your comfort zone a bit.
Well, yeah, you know, but at the same time, it was something that I just felt so passionate about. I don't know that anything fazed me. Yeah. I just really felt like this had to happen regardless of how much information I knew.
Look how smart you're going to be on the next movies, though. That's going to be Mariah T. Dunn, this is the part of the show we call your brother-in-law. You've gotten to the end of a long day, and you finally have a few minutes to yourself when your phone rings. It's your brother-in-law. Usually he only calls when he's got some friends coming to town, and he wants them to see if they could stay at your place. But this time the conversation is a little different. T-Don, your brother-in-law, has a great idea for a new version of the rub board. He's calling it the E-Frottoir. It's a wired-up gizmo that attaches to the rub board and plugs into an amp. Instead of playing the acoustic sound of the rub board, it plays samples of great rub board artists so that when you play, you can actually sound like Cleveland Chenier or Gino Delafosse or Bojack's wife, Shelley. The beauty of it is it attaches to an existing rub board so you can sell it to the 30,000 people who already have a T-Don Landry instrument. Your brother-in-law is in the development stage, and all he needs is a couple of $1,000, and he'll have the prototype ready. What do you say? Are you up for investing in the E-Frottoir?
I don't know.
That'd be my answer, too.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. Might be a market for it, though.
Talking about wiring up a rub board, I did that years and years ago.
Really?
When I played, that's all I did for a long time. Well, I had my rub board mic'd to where I could walk out in the audience and play. You know
Whoa.
What I mean? So
that's great.
But people are doing different things. As a matter of fact, I heard at the Festival International, they had a band there, and they had a rub board player playing, and he had it mic'd, and he had a wah-wah pedal, you know, like a guitar pedal to where he could change the sound of it. So that was pretty cool.
It's getting pretty advanced.
But, getting back to what you were saying, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that would probably, I'd make the rub board and give it to them and let them put the electronics on it.
Let the brother-in-law get it.
You know what I mean? But I just like to keep it traditional, keep it as an instrument, you know, just and then let people do what they want to do with it.
But you've got a great vision on all this because you still play in a band, right?
Yeah, I play. Right now, I play drums. I've been playing drums since I was a kid. But I play drums and sing in a blues band, a local blues band.
What's that called?
Called Wayne Blueburn's Band.
All right.
And we do the blues. And But I played Zydeco for so long, you get kind of burnt out. Especially the Zydeco that they're playing now, I like it. It's great for dancing, but it's not the most exciting thing to play on the rub board because it's pretty much double clutching all night long, double beat all night long. Now, it's great for the dancers and everything. Guitar player, drummer, rub board player, pretty boring. Pretty boring.
Okay, good for dancers, though.
Great for dancers, yeah. But I'm more into the Clifton Chenier type, Nathan and Zydeco cha-chas, where they, and Buckwheat Zydeco, where they put some blues in it.
Yeah.
You know, they put some rhythm and blues, some rock and roll, gospel. You know, they mix it up a lot more, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where I was comfortable. That was more my style.
Well, I think you, being a maker of instruments and being somebody in a band, I think that's got to help. You've
got to
relate a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Mariah, your brother-in-law has a great idea for a subject for your next film, Second Cousins, the sequel. It's about the relationship between Zydeco music, Cajun music, reggae, and Hawaiian music. He's at the very beginning of researching right now, and he just needs a small budget to get him to Jamaica and Hawaii for a few months so he can do some preliminary interviews for you. What do you say? Are you ready to embark on a Second Cousins, the sequel?
I mean, sure.
Sounds like we have the same brother-in-law, huh?
I think we got that same brother-in-law knocking at that door. You know what? I don't know that I want to do a second, like a sequel to this. I don't know that I would be interested
A whole separate subject, you think?
Yes. The next thing that I would, I'm not going to say the next thing, but one of the things that would involve this area, I'll share a couple things. I think that it would be nice and pretty interesting to kind of focus on Native culture, like Louisiana Native culture, modern day, you know, like the modern day powwows, the modern day mentality. And I think also, you know, just the whole trail ride scene is something that hasn't really been touched a whole lot on. And so those are a couple of things that I think would be interesting to do at some point. But again,
you probably got a better idea than your brother-in-law.
I think maybe it's my brother-in-law can keep giving me good ideas, though. You never know which one might stick.
Now, what about if you go ahead and you do a second film, for instance? You've done some of the hard parts that were probably very tough in the beginning. You mentioned, getting film distribution. You had to deal with music rights and such. I mean, is it a learning curve? Do you think the next one will be easier?
Oh, yes, a lot easier. The first one, too, I was getting a doctorate in the middle of all that. My job was working on the restoration.
Did you and your sister plan this, by the way, to both get doctorates?
No, she was teaching in Africa, and I was actually wrapping up my master's. And I told her, we were just, visiting, and I told her, I said, I think I'm going to go get a doctorate just because all this research I'm doing is going to kind of go to naught. I'm going to work on this film anyway. I might as well have the credentials behind my name since I'm going to be doing that kind of work and putting that kind of effort into it. And she thought, she told me, she said, I've always wanted to get a PhD too. So she's the one who got tipped off on this program at Arkansas State. It's the only Heritage Studies PhD program in the country. And I really liked the sounds of it. It was an interdisciplinary program. And so being that I have more of a folklore background, she has more of a history background, it seemed like it'd be a good fit. And, what better roommate, conference buddy, research partner than somebody that you can yell at and love at the end of the day. So that's kind of what we ended up doing. We ended up going up there, and the job that we had was working on the restoration of Johnny Cash's hometown.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes I was like, we put in 80-hour weeks. I mean, it was insane. We established the Johnny Cash Music Festival to raise money for the entire heritage site. We developed the heritage site and, did all the research for that. Went back and forth to Nashville many times to meet different family members who grew up in the house, like his little brother and his sister still around. And so that was such an involved process that the film literally just kind of had to get pushed to the back burner until I could actually focus on that. And then when I came back to Louisiana, that's when I was able to really, put the rest of my focus and energy on that.
And you're going to be very famous after the show. Do you want people to call you Dr. Mariah or Dr. East?
Dr. East or Mariah.
Oh, okay. All right.
We either know each other or we don't.
Mariah T. Don, there is literally nobody in Acadiana who hasn't danced to Cajun or Zydeco music at some time in their lives. For many, it's a regular ritual. For others, it's the most important tangible connection to the culture. Mariah, you've captured all these various strands of people in your movie, and Don, you're probably responsible for more toe-tapping and worn-out boot soles than anybody in a 50-mile radius. It's been a real pleasure talking to both of you, and I thank you both for taking the time to join me in Out to Lunch.
Thank you
You're
so
welcome.
Much for
Thank
having
you.
Us. We really appreciate it.
Really enjoyed.
My guests in Out to Lunch today have been Mariah East, the director and co-producer of the movie First Cousins, and T. Don Landry, owner of Key of Z Rub Boards. You can find out more about Mariah's movie and T. Don's instruments by following the links on our websites, krvs.org and itsacadiana.com. Today's show is recorded live over lunch at Café Vermilionville in Lafayette. Café V is open Monday through Friday for lunch and 6 nights a week for dinner with a courtyard that sets the scene for fine Louisiana cuisine. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our researcher is Ann Christian. Our theme song on Coo Monsieur Nice Guy is written by Mitch Foreman and performed by Mitch Foreman and Andre Michaud. Our Acadiana business consultants are Pete Prados from Innovate Acadiana, Zach Barker from The Opportunity Machine, and Dr. Blake Escadet. If you want to know what we look like, you can find photos from this show on our website and Facebook page. These photos were taken today by Gwen Oquen. You can get the show as a podcast. You can listen to past shows. You can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites, itsacadiana.com and krvs.org. Support for Out to Lunch Acadiana comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette, located off Pinhir near Les Saloum. Wyndham Garden Lafayette specializes in events, weddings, corporate meetings, and family reunions. Additional support comes from ABiz Magazine and AcadianaBusiness.com, the essential information source for business decision makers throughout the One Acadiana region. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. I'm Peter Ricciuti. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you again next week around the table here at Café Vermilionville for more business Acadiana style on Out to Lunch.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. Additional support comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette.
Please join me for From the Shamrock Shore, an hour of Irish traditional music from the 1920s to today, Thursday at 8 p.m., right here on KRVS 88.7 FM.
I'm Lee Klein, Peter, swinging it on a Friday night for KRVS's Big Band Swings. Plus, at no extra charge, we'll sway you with nice, slow ballads. It's a cornucopia of nostalgic sounds, Friday nights, 7 until 9. Plus, climb on board the Big Band Swings Express, Wednesday night at 9 for a special one-hour repeat. All on public radio for Acadiana, KRVS in Lafayette Lake Charles. And you can stream our audio at krvs.org. Love to have you along for the Big Band Swings and other things wing-ding.
Howdy, partners. Buckle up and join me, Ranella Rose Champagne, Thursday nights at 11 p.m. for Lost in Love, where I'll play some of my favorite love-inspired country hits right here on KRVS 88.7 FM. I hope you'll join the fun.
Funkify your life. Rare grooves with roots in New Orleans and the greater Gulf Coast region. Thursdays at 1 p.m. and Friday nights at 9 here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and at krvs.org.
KRVS 88.7